Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Really, Duncan had it. They turned it over. Alley-oop back to Kevin.
Oh, baby! Woo! KD!
You can see it coming, and the building is electric off that slam dunk.
Catastrophic.
Welcome back to the Wolf Among Wolves podcast. As always, I'm your host, Brendan Hedke. You can find me on Twitter at @B_HedkeNBA. And as always, this show is part of the Wolf Among Wolves podcast network. And today I am joined again by Kyle Tighe. He was just on a couple of episodes ago. We had a ton of fun chopping up some optimism. And then the preseason didn't look so good. So Kyle's back. We're going to talk about this upcoming season, what success means for Timberwolves as a whole and individually, and then just other things that Kyle may want to rant about, because we know Kyle loves to rant and I listen to Kyle rant. So let's go ahead and let's get started. Kyle, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem, man. So first off, let's talk about the news that just blew up Timberwolves Twitter on Saturday. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson got cut, and I don't think that's a move that many people expected. But what do you think about what are your thoughts on that move as a whole?
You're right that it blew up. I was kind of hoping that as the season ended with that Dallas win, we had the weekend off from content, and then we would kind of ramp up starting today for the Timberwolves season. That was thrown to the curb when that news broke and everyone lost their mind. I don't know. I mean, it sucks because he played well. He brings energy and defense, which are things that the Wolves have lacked for as long as you and I have probably been alive. But I just push back on the notion that it's like they're tanking, or like they're not trying to win, or this is this devastating move. Like, he wasn't really going to play, which is another argument that you might want to chime in on.
Right.
But like,
yeah.
He was an end of bench guy. Like, we're going to talk about the roster today. Like, it's a numbers game. They don't play 12 deep. He does some things well, but he can't spread the floor. That's an emphasis for them. Yes, he can defend, but they're going to try to find guys that can shoot and maybe defend rather than guys who can defend and not shoot at all. And that was his problem, is he can't shoot at all. So, and he could be back. You never know. They want to be flexible. We don't know if there'll be another move coming up shortly. But yeah, I mean, they didn't get better by cutting Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, but they also didn't they're not tanking because they cut a guy who was making $100,000. So
no, yeah, and I totally agree with you. You know, at first I was like, wow, that's really surprising, and then the more I looked into it, and then Logan Alton had a really good breakdown about like financially what would happen, and then earlier today I listened to Dane Moore. He had Jack Borman, Kane Asubis, teammate of yours, on his podcast, and they just talked about what the move means and why it happened, whether people agree with it or not, but what was the thinking of the front office. And I never was overly appalled that the move was made and never was like super mad about it. Yeah, I would like to have Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, and I think the Timberwolves would like to have him too if it just worked out better financially. But the flexibility is a big thing, because we know Rosas wants to make moves, but also the Timberwolves are so close to that luxury tax line that they just can't afford to go over this season unless you're like getting to the point where you're like almost guaranteeing yourself a playoff spot. So I think if like a trade was there, I think Rosas could convince Glenn to get into that tax again like he did last season. But if a trade's not there that really makes you a true contender to like for sure get into the playoffs, I don't see how you can justify getting into the tax again.
Right.
And Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, as much as people love him, the energy he brings, he was not putting the Timberwolves into that playoff conversation by himself.
Right.
Regardless of him having it or not, I don't think our playoff odds change by more than like 1%.
Right. And you brought this up, and this is a good point. If you haven't yet, Logan's article is perfect. And then right. Dane and Jack just hammered it home with a good pod. I mean, they broke down why. There's nothing else to really talk about on that. But I just, you know, I'm an optimist, but I also probably sound like an apologist. But, you know, there's 29 other teams that didn't sign Rondae Hollis-Jefferson to a minimum. Like, the Wolves made a good little signing to bring him in as a training camp deal. But, I mean, it's not, you know, it's like the Wolves are the dumbest franchise in the world when all these other franchises haven't made an effort to sign him either. So, in and of itself, it sucks because he was a good basketball player, but they're going to do something else. Come on. Like, Rosas has been here for like 21 months and he's made like 21 different roster transactions. Yeah. Like, something else is coming down. It could be by Wednesday. It could be next Wednesday, but I'll wait and see the long-term ripples of these. But it sucked. He was a good player. But I also think, and I know we're going to transition right into the other news, but you want to talk about Jordan McLaughlin?
Yep.
And I am excited about him. He's a good guy. My only take on him is he is like a superhuman being. But like, when we're starting to get really stressed on Twitter or, you know, texting each other and messages about Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and Jordan McLaughlin, we're probably already screwed because those guys don't move the needle. Like, I'm hyped that McLaughlin got paid. He should have got paid way more. I know you're a avid supporter of like restricted free agency sucks. And these guys get, you know, better or worse, bent over and they can't do anything. It sucks. And he bet on himself and he's going to try to get paid next year. But again, we're really worrying about like spices in the spice cabinet and not really focused on like, do we have meat in the fridge or do we have vegetables? Like,
yeah,
those guys that are going to play are going to wins and losses. These other guys are developmental pieces or fringe rotation guys. So,
right. And my thing with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson too is just what you said earlier, all these other teams, nobody else signed him.
Right.
And I think that means something, and his value can be, you know, you can assess his value in any way you want. I think he's an NBA player. I think he deserves to be in a team. But it's telling that no other team wanted to give him more than a non-guaranteed camp contract. And he wanted to be with the Timberwolves. I don't know why. I think he has a relationship with D'Angelo Russell from being in Brooklyn, and he's known Kat since he was younger. So maybe he thought that would be a good place. There would be some good camaraderie there. Ed Davis is here, you know, just people he's been around throughout his NBA career. But at the same point, the Timberwolves seem to be betting on a trade happening, like we talked about.
Yeah.
And I think that comes into the play with McLaughlin, too, is why they didn't want to use the 15th roster spot on McLaughlin.
Yep.
Was because they needed that flexibility to make a move and still take back a little bit more money than they're sending out.
Right. Right.
And Dane and Jack talked about that. So I don't want to talk about that for 45 minutes because they broke it down, and they broke it down better than you or I are going to be able to break it down.
Absolutely. Yep.
If anybody listening to this that really wants a breakdown, that maybe still frustrated about it, go listen to the Dane Moore NBA podcast that came out today. This morning.
Yep.
Go listen to that. They break it down way better. Transition into Jordan McLaughlin now, and you already started talking about him. He's going to get minutes this season, but he's not going to be a rotation player unless something happens to Rubio or Russell, or maybe even one of the wings. Maybe if Okogie or Beasley's out, McLaughlin might see some run. But the Timberwolves are always going to have D'Angelo Russell or Ricky Rubio on the court. Ryan Saunders alluded to that yesterday, I believe. So McLaughlin is either going to share the court with another point guard, or he's just going to be there in case they need another point guard. And right. I think he's not in the 10-man rotation. I think the Timberwolves aren't going to stretch it past 10-man rotation this year. Yeah, they're like, Jaden McDaniels is going to get minutes when the Timberwolves are inevitably down by 40 points against the Lakers next or this Friday or whatever day it is.
Yeah.
But he's not like, though, they're not going past 10 men night in, night out rotation.
Especially when they have other guys that can, you know, handle the ball a little bit. Like Ryan Saunders was on, I think this was yesterday, his media availability, when he said just flat out, which what we all knew, but he confirmed it, that Rubio or Russell will be on the court all 48 minutes.
Right.
He wants, I mean, bold strategy, of course, to have a point guard on the floor all 48 minutes, but that's his plan. So there's not going to be a lot of room for McLaughlin, but is he good? Yes. Is he on a good deal for the team? Yes.
Yes.
Did he kind of bet on himself? Yeah. But the, you know, the one thing I would take away from preseason is that, I mean, obviously I was wrong on Jalen Noel. I always kind of thought that experiment was dead. He looks really good. But if you actually, and you've been doing this, I just want to quick aside to like Wolves Twitter. It's been really great to see people go back and rewatch games. I think that's a really good way to like study. Cause like we're all in the game. We're all just ripping off tweets and making jokes. But like you go back and watch the first couple games and like Noel can score, but he's not like a point guard. Like he's not.
No, he's he's a combo guard where he's comfortable playing off the bounce, but he's not necessarily the guy that's going to make a ton of other plays for his teammates.
Right, right. Jordan McLaughlin is more like dollar store Chris Paul, where like he comes in and he is like off, like setting up the offense, little, you know, putting everyone in their spots, pointing around, kind of playing quarterback for better or worse.
Yeah.
So that's why I think it's important to have a guy like that. You can't have enough basketball IQ. He will get minutes, like you said. He also might be in Iowa or Atlanta or whatever they do with the G League. But that was one of those things where, like, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, the team got worse because they got rid of a player for no real reason at the time. Adding McLaughlin, the team got better. It doesn't matter. Yeah, like, they're safe. And D'Angelo Russell is going to – I mean, the ankle thing he had was, like, super precautionary, but he missed a preseason game. He's going to miss a game on a back-to-back because they're going to be resting him. So then you got to bring Jordan McLaughlin in, and it was a good signing, and I hope he plays well because that dude deserves to get a couple million dollars. Like, he's a good NBA player.
Yeah, and to your point about D'Angelo Russell, he's never played a full season in his NBA career. He played 81 games in Brooklyn the season he was an All-Star. Other than that, 80 games, 63 games, 48 games, 45 games, and that was a shortened season last season.
Yep.
And so he hasn't been, like, super injury prone where he's missing half the season every single year, but he misses 10, 15, 20 games, and you're going to need somebody like Jordan McLaughlin to fill in for him. And I liked your point about Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and McLaughlin, where McLaughlin actively helps this team more than losing Rondae Hollis-Jefferson does. And you can make the argument that you could have both, because we did have both. There was a roster spot there. But aside from that, I think he helps more than losing RHJ hurts us.
Mm-hmm.
But the other point, too, it's not out of the question that Jordan McLaughlin gets his two-way contract converted if there's not a deal to be had.
Right, which is why we just need to, like, say on Saturday that Rondae Hollis-Jefferson thing was bad, and then wait and see. Because if Jordan McLaughlin gets transitioned and he's the 15th roster spot and he gets a pay raise and we're all happy, then are we going to be that mad? Everyone loves Jordan McLaughlin, so let's just chill. Let's keep it down. But there'll be more moves to come. But, yeah, that was good. That was good. The RHJ thing was short, but what were you going to say?
And say that the Timberwolves at some point in the season make a trade.
Which they will.
Yeah. And the reason for keeping the roster spot open is in case a 2-for-3 comes or a 1-for-2 or whatever. But say a trade happens where the Timberwolves don't bring in another player. Say they bring in just a 1-for-1 or a 2-for-2 deal or whatever happens. And they still have that roster spot. Who's to say they aren't planning on giving that to Jordan McLaughlin? Or who's to say that if the Timberwolves don't make a trade at all, which I think is the likelihood of that is very low, but if they don't make a trade at all, we get past the trade deadline, Jordan McLaughlin's been playing good in his minutes. Who's to say the Timberwolves don't say, okay, we still have a roster spot. It's too late to trade for anybody. You've been playing really well. We want to keep you here. And we know you want the stability of having a full NBA contract. Here we're going to convert your two-way into a full NBA contract. And there's a chance that Rosas and McLaughlin have talked about the possibility of his contract getting converted. Now, I have no inside information or anything about that, but that's not completely out of the question. He could get converted. Will they do it? I don't know, because it depends. I think if they can stay under the tax and do it, they'll probably do it. If they don't, they're probably just going to have to try and re-sign him next summer if they want him back.
Yeah, and like I said, at the end of the day, it sucks to lose a player like RHJ who showed nice spurts. Again, he did show spurts, in blowouts. You know what I mean? Like he came into preseason games, it was kind of like, all right, you're kind of going in a minute or two before Jaden McDaniels does, who is like the human victory cigar for now as a developmental player. But yeah, I'm with you. Like if they don't do another transaction between now and the trade deadline, cutting RHJ was a waste, but they're going to. They turned over 90% of the roster. They're going to continue to like sniff around free agents, and they're going to, or, you know, on guys that are floating around out there, and they're going to make moves. And they love flexibility. And that's why they don't overpay for certain guys like a Tyus. They just say, we'll bring in a cheap guy. We want to be flexible. So it was an active weekend. Like I said, I didn't think we were going to have any news. And then it was like crazy news, but the roster seems kind of set for Wednesday. For now, I think we can say that the roster is set.
And the other thing with Jordan McLaughlin is he is, in my opinion, a better player than Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and projects to be a better player. Because when you go ahead and you look at his per 36 minute stats from last season, he averaged 14 points a game, 7.6 assists, 3 rebounds, and he only turned the ball over less than 2 times a game. Plus, he shot almost 40% from 3. He fits the system, and he's not a high usage guy whatsoever.
Right.
He's a better guard defender than D'Angelo Russell. Russell has a bigger body. He's probably can handle some of the point guards in the league on ball a little better, but I think that Jordan communicates better on the floor. He's scrappier, and he will actually not lose his guy when he's off ball like D'Angelo Russell. So he's less of a liability. Maybe on ball he's not as good. I don't know. I'd have to really deep dive into that because I haven't looked too much into his on ball defense. But he definitely seemed better last season.
Yep.
And Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is a liability on the offensive side of the floor, especially in this Timberwolves system. So I think that you really – and it could have worked. I'm not saying it wouldn't have worked. If you surround with 4 shooters, you can have a non-shooter on the floor. But the Timberwolves obviously didn't value that more than the flexibility that Cunningham brings. And that's like, fine.
If Rondae Hollis-Jefferson – and again, the Wolves did make a gamble, and it might not pay off. And if their defense is even more atrocious, or Rondae Hollis-Jefferson goes and wins a title or whatever with a contender, then, you should criticize Rosa.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, it's just weird, as you said a little bit ago, like, Nick Batum was picked up right away by the Clippers, and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson can't get any work. And it's like, is it because the Wolves are the dumbest franchise? Or, like, why haven't the Lakers given a training camp deal to a guy that everyone thinks should be the starting power forward for the Timberwolves? Like, there's got to be something there. You know what I mean? And, like, we don't –
like, don't the Mavericks, who were just – they're really good on offense, but they could use defense, and they brought in some defenders, but – why didn't they do it? Their roster was pretty full, but there's a ton of teams where it's like, why didn't they go out and try and do it? But it is weird because Hollis-Jefferson played almost 20 minutes a game on the 2-seeded Raptors last year.
Yeah.
Like a championship contender. And now he's struggling to find work in the NBA. It's just weird.
Or why didn't a team that has like a little extra cash left over for the salary cap just go throw like 1 year, $2 million at him when you know he's going to say yes because he took a training camp deal and then they could flip him at the deadline. They didn't because they want to have flexibility, which is the same thing that the Wolves want. So I wouldn't rule him out coming back. I mean, we read the same tweets from John Krasinski and stuff in Doogie. Like he could be back. But I think they value flexibility and they just knew like, hey, you're not part of the rotation. So it's better for you and probably better for us that we both part ways. And that's how we're at where we're at.
Yeah, and he didn't see – I mean, he hasn't publicly said anything about it or anything, but after he got cut, he was commenting on Malik Beasley's Instagram post, and he's acting like they're still friends and they're still in the same building. Like, I don't think there's too much bad blood in the situation or anything like that. I hope that there's not, but I guess we don't know that for sure. But, yeah, so McLaughlin – end of the story. McLaughlin's back in a two-way since we last talked. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is gone. Now, Timberwolves have played, since we talked last, 3 preseason games. They got just stomped by the Grizzlies in both of the first 2. And then they were kind of getting stomped by the Mavericks, and then they kind of had a lead, and then they were getting stomped again. And then the Scrubs came and pulled it out against four rookies and Boban Marjanovic. So takeaways preseason, just as a whole, biggest takeaways from you, for you.
The biggest takeaway is Jarrett Culver in his development. That's pretty much hands down. I think, as you said, we were optimistic like a night or two before the preseason started, and then the Timberwolves got waxed by the Grizzlies.
Yeah.
Who, in hindsight, if you go look, I think they played four preseason games maybe. They kind of waxed everyone.
Yeah, so, they looked like, really good. They could just be really good this year.
Yeah, and they're coached well, and like they don't maybe
– And Jaren Jackson Jr. hasn't even played yet.
Right, and from a general perspective, you might think that they don't have as much talent as the Wolves because maybe you don't recognize names, but do they just gel? Like they're a good cohesive unit.
For sure.
Yeah, the Wolves got pummeled by two games, and then in the Mavs game, I thought it was a nice back and forth. Carl, yeah. I thought the best game he'd had. Obviously, D'Angelo Russell was sidelined with just kind of quote-unquote rest with his ankle. I thought Ricky looked a little better. Anthony Edwards played awesome. He had that defensive stop that went kind of viral on Luka.
Oh, I loved it.
Josh Okogie looked good again, but yeah, I think they showed you some more life there, and they showed you that when or if they can get defensive stops, the team can be really fun. Like if they can get stops and then run rather than have to pull the ball out of the basket, they're going to be okay. And Malik Beasley had, I think, what was it, 12 rebounds. That's like another big thing for me is if
he 11, can, I think
11. Yeah. Okay. If he can rebound from his position, that's going to help a lot because they're not playing, you know, Derek Favors at power forward. They're not playing a big guy.
Yeah. Jake Lehman and Wancho are at power forward, who are guys that probably max are averaging 5 rebounds a night if in the starting lineup.
Yeah. So I guess my two biggest takeaways were preseason results don't matter. But Anthony Edwards, I think, has looked better every game he's played. And Jarrett Culver isn't the same guy. Like that's, yes, we can joke about that he's 100% on free throws. I think he took 10, but that's like a thing. Like that's
encouraging.
Yeah. That's a and big
he got a couple roles, and yeah, he's probably not even going to shoot 80% from the line this year. But if he's, and I wrote a whole piece on Jarrett Culver, you guys can check it out at awolfamongwolves.com, but Jarrett Culver shooting 70% from the free throw line, driving to the basket with purpose and knocking down, say, 35% of his threes compared to 30% last year, not even 30% last year, all of a sudden he's no longer unplayable on the offensive side of the ball like he was last year. And him and Josh Okogie could not share the floor last season at all.
Right.
Now you look at the two of them and it's like Okogie's jumper looks better. Culver's jumper looks a little bit better. He looks more confident in all aspects of the floor, and his defense looks better. I could see those two playing together. And granted, this is just preseason, but you can take things from preseason, but you just can't take them too far. But if what I have seen translates to the regular season, those two could share the floor and be effective on both sides of the court. I mean, yeah, you don't want those two to be your offense. Like, you're not going to throw them out there with Ed Davis, Jared Vanderbilt, and Ricky Rubio, probably. Like, you're going to want Karl Anthony Towns out there with those two.
Yep.
But that could be they can play together now, which all of a sudden opens up different lineups that you didn't have before, because you were pretty limited before if those two couldn't share the floor.
And it's also just big from a long-term, big-picture thing, because Josh Okogie, as I'm talking to you with my hands, but Josh Okogie's always had a higher floor, but a lower ceiling.
Right.
Does have a much lower ceiling because, like, last year, if you shoot 40% from the free throw line, your ceiling is pretty much unplayable. Right. But he also has a higher ceiling. Like, he has fringe star potential in terms of, like, what his body, you know what I mean? He's built like a Paul George, like a, not a Kawhi in strength, but like he's a wing with huge long arms and he's athletic. And like, if he can find some of that and kind of, I think a lot of it's always been mental for him. I don't know. I think I've seen this on Twitter too, so I'm not crediting properly, but like, it might be nice for Jarrett Culver to just play in empty arenas for a while. Like it might, like that might help his free throw. Like that might just help his nerves of just like getting more comfortable playing in what is essentially like the YMCA every night.
That might be big. To that point, I don't remember who said that. So I don't want to miscredit, but somebody said that on Twitter. But it also brings up the point, if that is if that is the case, does he build up enough confidence when there's no fans to where when fans return, he'll be okay? Or will things go downhill when they come back?
Yeah, and I would imagine he's not going to just like crater when people are allowed in the arena. But I do wonder if that's like a way for him to feel more comfortable. I also think too, and I remember Dane brought this up way back, but like he just didn't have any summer league. He didn't have a normal like 2019 because he was kind of bounced around with the NBA rules, weird training camp. He was stuck behind guys. You know, Wiggins was still here and stuff. They had him playing a lot of point guard, experimenting with him. And he was from Lubbock, Texas. I got friends down there, man. Like, it's a small college town, and he came to a big metropolitan area. And maybe he just needed a year to adjust. Maybe he just needed a year to know where his routine was, and now he's comfortable with or without fans. But he was my biggest takeaway. Like, him being good raises this team's potential astronomically, kind of, because like I didn't expect anything from him.
Yeah, and it's not like you can say what you want about playing in the preseason, but his defense looked good in the Memphis game, specifically on Ja Morant, and Ja Morant wasn't taking it easy. He was going full force, and Culver was able to cut him off, and Culver was able to, and Morant still played well. But not really against Culver. It was against Okogie, because Okogie didn't look great, especially in the first game against Ja Morant. I thought he looked okay, but he let Morant get in front of him, and he didn't recover well. But Culver played against good players and just still looked good. And not many people are going to argue with you that Culver didn't have a good preseason. Another takeaway of mine from the preseason was Towns looks more engaged on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
And Ryan Saunders has talked about this too. Like, it's a tangible shift in attitude from Towns. And if that's true, and if that translates to the regular season, the entire regular season, not just the first 20 games, which we've seen before, if that translates to the entire regular season, you could chalk the Wolves up to five, six, seven more wins just with Cat playing good defense on the interior. And that was something that stood out. And I hope I continue to see that throughout the season, because that would be huge for the team.
Yeah, he had some fouls in trouble, but I mean, I thought that first game the first game against Memphis, he just looked bad. But I think it was also like that dude hadn't really picked up a ball in a while, so I wasn't concerned. He looks a little winded still, because again, you don't get an NBA shape unless you play NBA basketball. Like, you can't get in shape playing practice or training or whatever. So I thought he looked like Towns. I thought his feet moved a little better. I thought he was, you know, for better or worse, not just jumping around. I thought he looked more under control. And yeah, you said it better than anyone can. Like, if his defense takes a leap, this everything again, kind of like my Culver take, everything again changes. Because everyone just has them pegged as Carl being a turnstile. And if he can anchor somewhat of a respectable semi-average defense, then everything gets better. And it helps that they have wing defenders that can, you know, stop the ball getting into the paint every possession.
Yeah, for sure. Any other big takeaways you saw from the Wolves? There's a lot of like minor ones we can talk about. But those are like the two biggest ones. I'm not really worried. The offense hasn't looked great. There's, like, the first few months of the season, or first month or two, just might not be that good. One, because the schedule is tough as hell. And two, they're just not – they don't know each other, which we've talked about before the season too. But I'm not too worried about shots falling
for D'Angelo Russell
and Towns. Yep. They're going to make shots. Everything's going to, you know – get back to the mean. The average is going to be there. Another thing was Naz Reid didn't play until the third game. And when he played, Ed Davis didn't. I don't think Ed Davis logged a minute in the Dallas game.
Nope.
So I can confidently say that basically the Wolves have a 10-man rotation. Point guards, Rubio, or Russell Rubio. Shooting guard probably is going to be Beasley and Edwards off the bench. At the three, or kind of positionless, but at the three, you'll have Okogie and Culver. I don't know. Maybe Culver steps in the starting lineup. I kind of doubt it. But I wouldn't be against it. And they'll guard the best wing player on the other team. Yep. And then at the power forward, you're going to have one of Jake Layman or Juancho Hernan Gomez starting, and the other one's going to come off the bench. And then at center, you're going to have Towns, and then Naz Reid's going to back him up. Why do you think the Wolves are choosing to go Naz Reid over Ed Davis?
I haven't rewatched the Mavericks game, so this was all heat of the moment. The team, it was a fun game, by the way. Like, it was a fun game to be on Twitter, and everyone's just like collectively having a good time. Uh-huh. So I'm saying this without a lot of evidence. I thought Naz Reid looked awesome. That's why I think they play him, because I think he's, again, generic brand dollar store Karl Anthony Towns. He spreads the floor. I mean, they have a system, man. Like, you say that's, all the time.
That's kind of the point I was getting at. I was going to see if you were kind of on the same page. The Timberwolves, think about it this way. The Timberwolves, when they – and they're not going to do five in, five out subs. Like, that's just not how the NBA works. But say when the five subs are in, think about the team. Rubio and Russell, they're a little different. Obviously, Russell is more of a scoring guard. But running the offense-wise, they're both really good passers. They both see the floor really well. Move down. Beasley, Edwards, two great athletes.
Yep.
Can light it up. Can get to the rim. Move down again. Okogie, Culver, not great shooters. Really good defenders. Move down to the power forward. You have Juancho Hernan Gomez and Jake Layman. Similar players. Both are actually – Layman's a better cutter, but both are good cutters. Both are solid shooters from the outside. And now you have Kat and Naz Reid or Ed Davis. Are you going to put in someone who plays nothing like Karl Anthony Towns? Or are you going to put in the Karl Anthony Towns light version? 10 times out of 10, you're going to put in the guy who can play in the same offensive system, in the same – somewhat of the same style – rather than somebody who doesn't do anything similar to Towns. So that's kind of my point. You just want to keep the offensive system the same. You don't want it changing all of a sudden. Now Jarrett Culver comes in off the bench, and he's playing with Ed Davis, who can't shoot, so he's clogging the lane. Culver's confidence is going to go back down because maybe not his confidence, but his ability to get to the rim, same with Edwards. It's going to go down because Davis is going to be crowding that space and they're not going to be able to get there.
And I still think that – I'm with you, by the way. It's actually a really good comp to be like it's not hockey. They're not going to go five in, five out. But basically your second five is like a weird spitting image of your first five.
Yeah.
It's
kind of eerily similar. Like, it's not – you know, they're not replicas. And I think the furthest two from being each other would be Rubio and Russell.
Yeah.
Just – based on how they get their points and everything. But other than that, there's like, it's kind of eerily similar what the backups are kind of like a light version of the starters.
But I would push back a little bit though, that again, the preseason like seemed like we actually got to learn a lot. It was also three games and two of them sucked. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, they weren't trying in the fourth quarter and stuff. But going back to like, you know, when they cut RHJ because he's on a minimum or a training camp deal, because, you know, they paid Juancho, whether you right. like it or not, I don't, but like money talks. Like, those guys get the most opportunities. They did trade a second round pick to get Ed Davis, who makes a couple like $5 million. Naz Reid is on a like peanuts deal. So like, there's a good chance come game 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, Ed Davis takes those Naz Reid minutes. I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen, but there'll be nights, man, where you got to throw Ed Davis on.
Oh yeah.
On Jokic. You know what I mean? Cause Naz has developed his body so much. Go look at 2019 Summer League when that dude was undrafted. He was couldn't like jump over the free throw line. Not from it, like he couldn't jump over it. And now he's in great shape. But there'll be a lot of nights when he gets probably DNPs and Ed Davis takes that spot. But I just think long term, I don't know, man. I just really like him. He sets really hard screens, and he had a couple deflections and a couple blocks against Dallas. He was in there, man, when they made that comeback.
Like, I'm just gonna really like age myself, and not in like an old way, in a young way, but like low key. Just saying the word low key really just makes me seem like I'm still in high school. But Naz Reid, I have a weird suspicion that he might actually be an okay defender. Like, I think he could actually be solid on that end of the floor, which would be big for the Timberwolves. If he shows any defense. then that kind of is like, okay, if he has a little bit of defense and way more offense than Ed Davis, you can't warrant playing Ed Davis over him unless, you know, you are going up against Jokic and you just really need some stops. Yeah. Then you throw Ed Davis out there. But yeah, I think there'll be some matchup stuff where the Timberwolves, yeah, they'll have to play Ed Davis. You know, if they're going up against, I don't know who plays too big, even like Utah. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert, whatever. Not huge offensive threats, but still two big dudes. Like, what do you do in that situation? And we'll find out pretty soon because they play them in like a week or two, like Utah's game's coming up. But anyways, yeah, it seems like Naz Reid will be the backup center, but it's not to say Ed Davis won't play. But to push back on that a little bit, and you said that the Timberwolves did give up a second-round pick to get Ed Davis, and they also actually sent out, you know, Amari Spellman, who just, like, for whatever reason, just despised the Minnesota Timberwolves before he even got there, and then Jacob Evans, which roster-wise, again, flexibility, you bring in one player for two. But I think that Davis was brought in more to kind of be that small cap-filling guy, that $5 million contract guy, to where P.J. Tucker has an $8 million contract, you take Ed Davis. And I don't know the trade rules with somebody that just got traded and whatever. But at some point, Ed Davis and Jalen Noel gets you enough money to get P.J. Tucker. Where?
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and it fills a little bit of that cap. But regardless, Ed Davis, if he plays, it's going to be limited matchup-based things, I would assume.
Yeah, especially I was going to say.
The Wolves are going to prioritize developing a younger player over a 30-year-old Ed Davis or however old he is.
No, I'm with you. I was just going to say, like, to anyone who thought that they traded a second-round pick for a guy to be a locker room presence, like, that's not it. Like, there will be plenty of nights when they give him the nod over. I mean, just watch any NBA team. There'll be nights when they have a 10-man rotation, but that 10th man fluctuates. So I think Naz Reid could play 21 minutes in a night where Carl has foul trouble. I think the next night he could be a DNP and Ed Davis gets those minutes. So, but I'm with you too. I think his salary is beneficial. I think at the trade deadline, if the Wolves are probably sniffing the 11 seed, he's an active player to go out in a trade that maybe you get a second round pick back. I think they'll figure it out. But I mean, that's the type of guy that you see on playoff rosters is Ed Davis. So not a bad move. I'm a big Nas guy. You're a big Nas guy. So yeah, I agree though. 10-man rotation is probably what we're going to sniff come Wednesday. So
yeah. And that's kind of what Dane Moore has been saying too. He's been alluding to that. And he thought it might even be 9-man before before Derek Culver looked good in the preseason. But I would, you know, I can't talk about the preseason without talking about Anthony Edwards, because obviously he is the Timberwolves' number one pick. He's the guy. They just drafted him. Like, what's he going to do? And he just didn't look very good in game one. Then he looked a little better in game two. And then in game three, he looked really confident. He had some really solid defensive plays. He had a couple short stretches where he just took over offensively. And he just looked really, really good. And it just kind of shut everybody up. Just like, he just looked really, really good. Like, he belonged on the NBA floor. And just kind of people, I mean, after the first game, everybody was not everybody. I'm not okay. I shouldn't generalize like that. Some people were like, oh, we should have taken LaMelo. Like, LaMelo had 0 points, 10 rebounds, and 4 assists or whatever he had. And LaMelo looked pretty good, whatever. But like, it was just all, it's the preseason. These guys got drafted 3 weeks before their first preseason game. Like, just
that's it. It's not even that it's the preseason. Before I ever started covering the team, I went to Vegas like 5 years in a row and just sat. There was a time before Summer League blew up where you could go to Vegas and you could sit courtside for an entire day for $100. And it was like the best NBA experience ever. I'm sitting like, I'll show you. I'm sitting 4 seats away from Durant and Harden when Harden was a rookie. So you're watching the rookies. But again, those guys had 2 weeks in Vegas. Nonstop practice, nonstop basketball. Anthony Edwards didn't have any of that, right? So, like, his first game against Ja Morant should have been his first game against, you know, the Sacramento G League team out in Vegas in June or July. Like, it's just, And again, by if you thought his game one was bad, you should then be that much more impressed by how he looked against Luka in game three. Yeah. Like, he took large strides. He is going to look bad in some stretches where his shot doesn't fall. He's going to get amped up. He's going to miss a shot. He's going to have turnovers. But I don't know how you came out of the preseason not being like, man, that dude has like the tools. Like, he's the physical specimen, and he just is energetic. And he also just says all the right things. Like, he sounds like he really likes learning and like listening. He's the number one pick, man. Like, he should have been like, he could have been like, hey, I'm the number one pick. Like, this is my team. And he's like, no, dude, I'm a role player. Like, that's impressive for a kid who turned 19 in August. So,
yeah. And I don't want to spend too much time on him because I'm sure he'll get talked about the entire year, but he has looked really good. And that's just been really encouraging, especially in game three. But to your point about, you said it earlier, that one possession against Luka Doncic, like, yeah, he's not doing that every time down the court against Luka Doncic. But the fact that he did that as a rookie shows me that he could do that. He has the ability to do that, and he just has to put in the work to get to the point where he's doing that consistently. That's on a top, whatever, 8 player in the league. Yep. It's just impressive. It's just really impressive.
Like I said, he's not gonna shut. Anthony Edwards, 19 years old, isn't gonna be the Luka stopper. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like when Josh Okogie had that one awesome block on Harden. Yep, Harden still got buckets. You know what I mean? Like, there's very few guys that are shut down defenders, and there's certainly not guys on rookie contracts, and there's certainly not guys that have never played an NBA game. So, given time. But he showed, I mean, there's a lot of ways. LaMelo had dominated Twitter with that one, you know, his passes and stuff. He really struggled with his shot, though. Like, I'm still a believer in him, but
yeah, I am too.
He's got a long way to go, too. Like, Wiseman hasn't even been on the floor. Like, you're going to have to give this class that was already kind of, you know, kind of, for a better word, shit on. You're going to have to give them some time to grow, because they're going to need minutes and reps to kind of figure out where they belong.
Yeah, and the thing with his defense, and I wrote this in the Culver piece, but it doesn't just pertain to J.R. Culver. It pertains to every single person playing defense in the NBA. And I said the most important thing a defender can do is slow down their man. So if James Harden comes to town with the Houston Rockets, Josh Okogie's job isn't to strip the ball away from him a couple times. His job will be to limit Harden to 18 field goal attempts instead of his average of 22. To 26 points instead of his average of 34, you know, and cut down on the fouls. Don't get him to the line as much. Like, that is what effective defense is, not 6 turnovers, you know, instead of Harden's usual 4 turnovers. Like, that's not what's going to make a difference. And I think the same thing with Anthony Edwards. And Edwards is going to have to, you know, he needs to be a good defender at some point in his career. But I'm not going to be surprised or upset if he's not a good defender Wednesday night against the Pistons Saturday night against, I don't even know who they play Saturday night, the Lakers or Clippers or whoever I don't even have their schedule open. But he just needs to show promise that he can. Yeah. And I think that David Vanderpool is going to unlock a lot of that. And it was nice to see. And we talked about Vanderpool last time. We talked a week and a half ago or 2 weeks ago or whatever it was. But Vanderpool sees the same things we do and more, and he sees the tools that Edwards has. He saw those glimpses, and he's going to try and get that out of him. And I think that Edwards, like you mentioned, is going to be like Vanderpool's guy. Like, you're going to, like, David, you're going to develop Anthony, and like, that's your project. Turn him into whoever, obviously not Damian Lillard, but like mold him. But it is his
Damian Lillard. Like, that's his rookie that is so wet behind the ears. He doesn't even know what way is up. And that is the guy that Vanderpool will sit by him on the bus and on the plane, and they'll watch film together. And that'll be his guy. And as he's mentioned in interviews already, or like media stuff, rookies, the best way to get on the court, man, is just defend. You know what I mean? It's not to go out there and jack a bunch of shots or make a bunch of flashy passes. Can you defend? So Vanderpool is gonna be like, hey, the way you'll stick is play defense. And then if you get stops, we'll get you the ball. We'll let you run. So he's going to be fine. He's going to be awesome. I'm a huge Anthony Edwards fan. So,
yeah, I'm not worried about Edwards. We'll move on to the next topic too. I didn't tell you that we were going to bring this up, but I just want to touch on it because the news did come out today. Malik Beasley's legal issues. I don't have any takes on it or anything, but I agree. I'd be remiss to not at least bring it up. Basically, I want to find the wording here. So Shams reported that any potential jail or home confinement will not exceed 120 days for Beasley and will be served at the end of the 2020-2021 season. So if he does have to do any home arrest or jail time or anything, it'll be after the season's over. And what was the charges? He entered a guilty plea for threats of violence from obviously everything that happened in October, and his felony drug charges were dismissed. So Dane Moore said that discipline from the league is still highly likely and the suspension is still likely. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that that come at some point this year. So I'm not going to talk about the legal trouble because that's his stuff. I don't have to have an opinion on that whatsoever. But I do want to talk about what happens when Malik Beasley, if and when Malik Beasley is suspended, what happens for those games? And I don't think it's going to be like half the season suspension or anything, but I have no idea. Does the rotation just become nine man and he's just out and you just let Edwards have more, Culver have more, Okogie have more, Russell have more? Does McLaughlin fill that role and you see more play of Russell at the two and Rubio at the two? Or does Jalen Noel fill that role? Does he come in and, you know, probably Edwards would start and then Noel comes off the bench? What do you think would happen there if and when Malik Beasley misses time due to a suspension?
Well, yeah, like I said, I think credit to Dane, because Dane was the first one when this all started up that said he had cited some league source that said that a suspension will be likely. Right. I also think by reading through the tea leaves, we're probably looking more at like 2 to 4 games than anything, you know, like 10 to 15. Right. I also think his sentence is like February 9th or something. So
yeah,
kind of all I'm saying is that like it's also, and this is important, and it's not like the most source thing in the world, but it is informed. Like the Timberwolves knew this would play out the way it did. Like NBA teams, I mean, you know this, like NBA teams have security teams and they are well established with their local police departments and they have lawyers on retainer. I mean, so it wasn't like today was like, oh my God, wow, that's crazy. It's not going to be as bad as you thought. And that's how I interpret it. It's not, it's legal stuff. Like you said, that's not my comfort zone, but it did seem like he got off easier than we thought he might.
Yeah.
And yeah, so if he's out of the rotation for 2, 4, 5 games, that's also 3 months from now. So, I mean, you listed all the guys that could fill those spots. I don't know, man.
Team could look different by then.
It could be Devin Booker's spot. Like, I'm joking, but like, it could be anyone's spot at that point. But I would imagine that by that time, if we are talking 3 months from now, it'll probably be Ant. Like, you slide in the rookie who's got his, who's reps in, and he takes that spot, and then you just kind of shift guys around. Like, then Rubio's the first off the bench, and Culver comes in with him, and I don't think it'll be a big deal. I think today's news was good if you're a fan of the team, because I don't think he's going to see as much issues as we thought. But yeah, I think by that time, you make a good point. It could be Noel. Like, maybe he's balling, and he just is just – He's Malik Beasley light, and they just slide him in. But I think it'll be Edwards. I think he'll chew up all those minutes, because you got to find, you know, 28, 30 minutes for Ant by the time February rolls around.
Yeah. Another quick note just around the league. Luke Kennard signed for like, what was it? 4 years, $72 million or something more than what Malik Beasley got.
Yep.
That makes Beasley's contract look better.
I agree. I don't want to speak on something I don't firmly know. Wasn't watching a lot of Pistons games last year. I know Luke Kennard is nice, but
four years, $64 million, which is $16 million a year. Malik Beasley's average is 15, but player option in the last year or team option in the last year, obviously, you know, 8% raises throughout. But Luke Kennard's a good player, but
I think more than anything, it just tells you that that's why the Wolves signed him and courted him and showed up at his house at whatever 12:01, whenever free agency started, or 7:01. Right. Because more than anything, I mean, you're talking about Luke Kennard, but Markelle Fultz got paid today. Jonathan Isaac got paid today. There was a slew of OG Anunoby, like a ton of guys got paid. The NBA still has money. The pandemic did not hurt NBA franchises as much as people want to believe. Like, people got
owners are going today. To go over the salary cap. Still, they're not going to be like every owner has the money to pay that.
Yeah,
pay that money. But yeah, I think it just contracts. The more contracts we see, you just see like there's a premium for 40% 3-point shooters on the wing. Luke Kennard, Joe Harris, Malik Beasley all made good money by being knocked down 3-point shooters from the wing.
Yep.
And I don't think that his contract looks as bad as people thought it did originally. I thought that with the Joe Harris deal too, because Joe made a lot more than Beasley did.
Yep.
And honestly, with those three, Kennard, Harris, Beasley has the highest ceiling out of any of them.
I'm biased, so I can understand if you said that, but I was literally going to say the same thing.
Yeah.
If you had to pick all of them, Beasley has the highest chance to like be the best defender.
And he's the most athletic. And just, and that's fine. And I would probably take the other two to hit. I would take Harris or Kennard to hit a shot over Beasley. I think they're better pure shooters. But I think Beasley's got the high ceiling. Sorry for the awkward ending to that podcast. Kyle and I plan to define success for each player on the Timberwolves and for the Timberwolves in general. And we did that later on, but this podcast ended up being 2 hours. So we split it up, and that is going to be in an episode for tomorrow before the Timberwolves play the Pistons with the season opener. So make sure you guys come back and listen to that one. Subscribe on your favorite podcast service so you don't miss it. But anyways, thank you guys so much for listening. I really do appreciate it. Anyways, it's been Brendan, and I'm saying peace out.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.